A Christian View of Work. Right at the beginning of man's stay on this planet, immediately after his creation, the Creator laid out before our first parents their duties. Among them was the dressing and keeping of the garden that He had prepared for them. Immediately following the expulsion from the Garden of Eden, God again commanded man and woman to work, but warned them that hereafter, because of their sin that had produced the curse on this planet, it would take much more effort to get the same results from work. After the flood, in the Ten Commandments, Sabbath commandment, the order to work for 6 days and rest the Sabbath has been kept before God's people. And in the closing chapter of 1 Thessalonians, Paul laid down the dictum that the man who won't work shouldn't be fed. There's a connection between work and the garden and its fruit, and work and eating the product of what we produce. Throughout the scriptures, then, work is a part of the ideal life that God has set before His people. Part number one. An example of how we should view work is given by God Himself. He is a working God. Jesus noted, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." In His great argument to establish the Sabbath rest in Hebrews chapter 4, Paul again holds God as the example, that he who stops his work on the Sabbath day should follow God's example, who stopped his work after working for 6 days. Not only did he work for 6 days to create this planet, he has been working ever since to maintain this planet. In fact, he never stopped. When Jesus Christ came to earth and Jesus Christ returned to heaven, he worked. He is man's priest. He is man's sacrifice. He is man's judge. He is man's king. And for the 30 hidden years in Nazareth, he worked as a carpenter shop to such an extent that he was called the carpenter, ho technon, the technician, as if to indicate that his reputation identified him as the most skillful in all Nazareth. God and Christ have set us examples of ceaseless work. Part number two. Work is a divine ordinance, and it applies to all who are able to. The Lord took man, that is mankind, and put him in the garden to do some things about it. He was to produce his food. And as he produced his food as a result of his work, the byproduct was happiness. The idle will suffer hunger. Much sloth, and the whole city disintegrates. So the first reason for work is food production. The second reason is shelter. We should prepare for ourselves homes. Adam and Eve took the vines and the plants and the leaves that were growing, and with living materials made themselves a living bower in beautiful Eden's shade. Third reason, the sleep of the laboring man is sweet. Here is a balance in the rhythms of life. Work and rest. 6 days, 7th day. The rest or the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. And we have found in our own lives, I suppose, 100 times, that those of us whose life is mainly sedentary, who sit, do not have too much physical activities. Unless we make ourselves engage in physical activities, we lie awake at night and find it difficult to sleep. It affects the health. It affects our environment, whether we work or not. We can make the country beautiful, or we can let it grow up around us without any discipline. And as we work, the Bible tells us we should work with our might, doing the tasks that are laid to our hands. Now, some folk do tasks that are not laid to their hands. They're laid to some other person's hands. They are busybodies. They mix, they give advice, they criticize where they have no business to. Each man has his own responsibility. Each man has his own work to do that he should do to his utmost ability. Part number 3. The effect of sin on man's working conditions, habits, and ability. The longer down the stream of human history we go, the weaker man becomes. From living almost 1,000 years, very few men today live even 100. Their lifespan has been cut down more than 10%. His ability to labor is reduced. He gets tired much more quickly. Work becomes more arduous, more of a drudge. He is anxious in his food production, and we see conditions in the world today where men eke out the meagerest of livings with their toil. Now, even though man's strength and man's skills may have degenerated, it's up to man to cultivate all the skills he had. The carpenter uses his tools, his planes, his chisels, his hammers, to construct whatever he wants to construct. And as Isaiah warned, many times he makes the work of his hands his God. And then work then becomes, and the product of the work then becomes, a species of idolatry. So as we work today, bringing into our lives the work ethic that diligent Christian people have done through the centuries, we should not, on the one hand, be indolent, on the other hand, workaholics, but strike a balance between labor and rest, as God did. Part number 4. The responsibility and reward of work. In other words, why do we work? We work to eat ourselves, we work to help our families eat, and then we may work a little more to help somebody else. We thus, if we faithfully do it, can work as unto Christ. We have a reward more than is merely superficial. We're working for Christ. I remember hearing a story, which you probably have heard many times in your life, about an architect who was visiting one of the medieval churches in Europe while it was being erected. And he asked one of the laborers, why are you working? He said, well, I got a wife and family I've got to support. He asked somebody else, why are you building this cathedral? I got to make some money. And he asked a third person. He says, I want to glorify God. Now, he felt he supported his family and he earned a living, but his main thrust in working was to glorify God. Now, some servants, as Paul noted, were master watchers, clock watchers, foreman watchers. As long as there was somebody standing over them, they seemed to be diligent. But as soon as the foreman turned his back, they weren't honest in what they did. They didn't work faithfully. And so a Christian has a responsibility in his work. and why he is working. And if he contracts to work for so much an hour, he should work faithfully and diligently, remembering that there are relationships thus contracted between a master and his servant, while at the same time, both master and servant consider themselves brothers in their daily toil. Part number 5, work and vocation. Vocation comes from the word vocare, vocal, to call. To what are we called? Now, Paul worked as a tent maker, but his vocation was preaching the gospel. So did Aquila and Priscilla. And in some churches today, the pastors are not paid except some sort of a stipend, and they have to work during the week to support their families, even though they feel a calling to the ministry. Vocation is what we are called to do. God calls, 1 Thessalonians 5:24, and when he calls, he empowers. He's given us a holy calling, and he doesn't leave us to our own works. He makes it possible for us to do his work as a result of his holy calling. He enables us, and he can do that by transforming our skills and giving us gifts. And so as we carry out the ministry of reconciliation, we do so as a result of our vocation, and at the same time, we are carrying out our daily work from day to day. Part number 6, work, worship, and rest. All this is part of religion. This is part of the biblical doctrine of labor. Not to do too much, not to do too little. We can go overboard fanatically in our work, we can even do that in our worship, and we can do that in our rest. But as the commandment indicates, there should be a balance. We have been given 6 days to do all our work, whatever God requires of us. And then we are to balance it on the seventh day, remembering that it belongs to God, working for Him, carrying out His design in our lives, adoring Him and thanking Him for what He has given us and what He wishes to give us. To contemplate, to look over the blessings of life, to realize what God has done for us, to thank Him for our health. All these are factors which will help us to worship. And then the spring that is kept constantly under strain will break. We need to rest. Rest may not be total inactivity, but it may be a change. That which is restful, which is recreative. So we talk about recreation in the best sense. The man who sits to do most of his work would be well advised to take up some activity for his recreation that gets his muscles going. And the man who has to employ his muscles in his daily work would be well advised to get some kind of quiet, sedentary type of recreation where he can balance what he is doing. The man who has to use his brain should find a recreation that he can use his hands, and vice versa. And this kind of balance between all the physical activities of work and rest and then of worship is what will make Christian the best example in the world.